continue the conversation at dannymorell.com/awakenyou. Welcome to this week's episode of The Higher Self. I got to be honest with you guys. We're here in the middle of our relationship intensive. It's a three-day workshop we do four times a year. We focus on relationships, finances, health, and spirituality, and this has been deep. Would you guys agree? I am literally feeling this. I am, anybody else breathing freer for the first time? Anybody? Yeah. I think this is going to be a special conversation because we have our friend Emily Freeman back. Yes. Emily, how are you?
Thank you. I'm great. It's so exciting to be here and to be with all of you. I mean, this room, the energy in here is transformational. You guys had me emotional even just observing the exercises, and it's just so wonderful what you're doing here.
I'm glad you're here, and yeah. I'm glad you had a chance to like witness like what this was all about, you know?
Yes.
Emily, for the listener that's listening, why should they listen to this conversation?
Mm. Well, if you want to be in a partnership, a fulfilling partnership, or you are in a partnership and maybe it's not exactly what you thought it was going to be, it's not meeting your expectations, this episode, I believe, is going to help you understand how to connect with yourself in order to fully connect with somebody else. Because most of the time, as you guys have seen a lot today, a lot of our barriers in relationship, a lot of what we don't allow ourselves to experience is not because of somebody else. It's because of us. So when we understand how to truly connect with that part of us that's so scared and so fearful and so guarded, we can actually experience the partnership that we want. And so a lot of what I teach is to throw away the tactics, right? Because a lot of people come to me wanting to find their dream partner. But those are only going to create more divide. They're only going to make you feel more insecure because you aren't truly being you, and you're asking the other person to also not truly be them. And so this is about really creating conscious connections with somebody romantically. So I'm really excited.
I love that. And so, and you are, just for our audience here and in internet land, you're a dating coach.
I am a dating coach, yes.
So what is a dating coach exactly?
Yes.
Like, how does that work?
So like I said, I do help people better understand how to create relationships with themselves so that way they can connect with another. So I help you first understand, what are your current dating patterns? What does that look like? What have you been doing that's gotten you to the place that you're in now, or your relationship patterns? And then how do we actually change those? Not just on a conscious level, because we can all say that we deeply desire this partnership, but our actions don't match it. So how do we actually get our actions to match it? Well, we have to look at the subconscious level. And as you guys learned earlier, the somatic level too, right, in your body. And so it's really important to look at it holistically and say, okay, I've created my current reality today and taking that ownership. How do I create the reality that I want tomorrow? So we look at those patterns, we then change them. And then I also help you understand how to balance your masculine and feminine energies as well in order to match with the partner that you will actually feel connected to. So many of us end up attracting somebody in the most beautiful ways that shows us exactly where we're not whole. Mm. And we get to see that reflection. And so through our coaching, we look at, okay, what are those patterns and what are you truly meant to open up and learn right now in order to attract the right person for you? And so looking at those dynamics, looking at where you might be disconnected from your masculine, disconnected from your feminine, and being able to then connect with somebody who is in their core energy while you're in your core energy. And then the last piece of it is looking at more practical relationship skills. How do we communicate in a way where we can actually hear each other? How do we practice listening? How do I actually show up in a way that inspires the other person to want to get closer to me? So it's really a three-part process.
Okay, I love that. So part number one was looking at
programming.
The programming within.
Yes.
Part number two is masculine and feminine energies, mm-hmm. right? I want to focus like in those two.
Sure.
Because you said something to me prior to coming up. You said, you know, there's like 100 ego deaths that you have to go through in order to get partnered, in order to like find a match, right?
Yes.
And I'm going to say this for two different groups of people. Like if you're single, I think this is very important that you listen to this. Mm-hmm. But then also what we've discovered in this room is that if you're in a relationship and you never had those ego deaths, then you're still coming head to head with them with your partner.
And
right?
The same partner, just in a different body.
Exactly, yeah. Absolutely. And until you deal with these things and until you have these ego deaths, which we'll describe in a second, you're going to keep going from partner to partner, mm-hmm. continuously reliving the same experience, potentially blaming them, when in
Correct.
All actuality, there's a part of you that needs to heal.
Yes.
Yeah, does that resonate?
Yes.
So if you were to describe to me, you know, you said ego death. For someone that's listening, mm-hmm. like, how would you best describe an ego death?
It's a releasing of our stories and beliefs and actions that have created who we are today. Right? So an ego death is really changing the way that you view yourself, the way that you view your relationships, the way that you view the world. Because we all have egos, right? They're there to protect us, right? It's a part of our subconscious that's been programmed to go, I know how to keep you safe, and this is what we're going to do to keep you safe. But in reality, a lot of those protective mechanisms are actually holding us back from the very thing that we want the most. So in order to get what we want the most, we have to step into a new version of ourselves. And when we step into a new version of ourselves, well, by nature, we have to release a part of ourselves to create space for that.
Right.
And that can be a very painful experience, as much as you want it, going from your single identity, a single self, and whether you're dating or in partnership, you might still be in your single self, even if you're partnered, right? So going from that single self to a partnered self is a big journey, because a lot of us have been told that we have to keep our independence, that to make sure that someone doesn't hurt us. And so we separate ourselves from the entity of our partnerships instead of recognizing that we are a part of that dynamic and actually stepping into that to take full ownership and be in our partnered self.
You know, Emily, as you say that, through the work that I've gone through and through the work that we help people experience, mm-hmm. I can see that saying that is probably like one of the scariest things for a human being to do.
Yep.
Because we say we want to be in relationship, we say we want to find the one, but we don't realize happens is that when we are in that relationship, when we are finally partnered, right, is that that partnership was drawn into our life to help us look at the parts of ourselves.
Yes.
And to make it more granular and more real, to look at the way that we think, the way that we feel, the way that we are, mm-hmm. and that relationship is a space for us to work through some of that stuff, if you choose to.
Yes.
Like, you gotta choose it,
yes.
Right? So give me an example, let's break this down, right? Give me an example of a way that we could think or feel about ourselves when mm-hmm. we're single mm-hmm. that has to go,
yeah.
if you wanna be not in a relationship, but in a beautiful, loving relationship. Because there's a difference, right?
Mm-hmm. Yes. Well,
give me an example of one.
I'm trying to choose between one right now.
Okay.
So I have a few, but one that feels really important to say today is the example of having a fantasy perspective of your partner, right? So especially in our modern dating world, we have the illusion of so many options around us that it's so easy to go, oh, well, I like everything about him or her, but I want their hair to be slightly different, right? I'm gonna go on to the next one. And so our single self has created this real idealistic person. And it's not to say to not have standards. Absolutely, you should have standards. Absolutely, you should have boundaries. Absolutely, you should be advocating for yourself and making sure that your partner is going to be compatible with you for the long run. But at the same time, we can create such an image that we're so rigid in around who our partner should be that we don't actually let somebody in. And it's used to protect ourselves. So as soon as someone gets that much closer, we can find something wrong with them and we push them away.
It's interesting you say that, because I remember a pivotal moment when I was like coming closer into partnership with Jen. Mm-hmm. And I always thought that like my partner was gonna be like Latin American, like Hispanic, mm-hmm. right? And I remember there was a point where I, like, my soul felt this is her. Mm-hmm. This is her. This is mm-hmm. the one you've been searching for your whole life. But she's not Latina.
Yeah.
So like, this doesn't fit in the image that I had, right? Mm-hmm. And in the list, in the checkbox, in the yes. whole thing. And I heard God say, but you're not gonna not be with someone just because of where they were born. Mm. Like, are you? Mm-hmm. And I thought, no, that doesn't make sense. And then one of the things that I had to go through was I was so judgmental and so critical, and my list had to be perfectly met, that 3 months into the relationship, she flipped it on me. Mm. She flipped it on me and she was like, I don't know. I know I check all of your boxes. I don't know if you check all of mine. Mm. And I had never felt a pain. True story, guys. Mm. I had never felt my heart be broken so much because I couldn't hold on. I had to let go. I had to say, well, go out there and go do what you gotta go do and go date and go whatever. And my ego immediately, like I think I set up 6 dates in like 6 minutes. Hey, what are you doing? Hey, what are you doing? Hey, what are you doing? But then all of them I canceled because I was like, but I don't want them. I want her, you know? And to have that list like used against me, it was like a lesson, like, okay, chill out with this stuff. Like, have your standards, but don't be so damn critical when it comes to these imaginary lists. Yes. It was part of my ego that had to die.
Yes.
Yeah. Does that make sense?
Absolutely. And what I take my clients through is actually a vision of partnership. So, of course, we look at the values and the qualities and the traits that you want in a partner. But at the end of the day, how do you really feel with him or her? Right? How do you feel? And I heard you guys talking about that earlier today, right? Oh, I felt safe. I felt seen. I felt heard. That's what's really going to cultivate that fulfilling partnership. That partnership that allows you to do what you're meant to do in this world and not be held back by criticism and perceptions and criticism of self.
Yeah.
Right? Yeah. In my partnership, he's been such a beautiful mirror of how I don't need to criticize myself. Right? So it's wonderful.
Yeah, for sure. As you said that, I thought about masculine and feminine because I thought like the list is very masculine.
It is.
But like feeling is very feminine, right? My question to you is, what happens when we go into partnership and yet we still don't let that part of us go. What happens when we're actually in a relationship?
Yeah, chaos. And if you are familiar with chaos, then you will continue to gravitate towards that. And it's going to be really hard to allow yourself to not experience that chaos because it will be uncomfortable because you'll actually be seen. You won't be distracted by the self-sabotage or the protest behavior, right? In attachment theory, call it protest behavior or deactivating strategies. Either trying to bring someone closer to you through protest behavior in ways that are not actually going to create intimacy and closeness. They actually push someone away. Or deactivating strategies, trying to push somebody away who really wants to be close to you. And so we get into what a lot of people call the push-pull dynamic. And in attachment theory, it's called the anxious avoidant trap, where one person has a subconscious fear of abandonment or rejection, and the other person has a subconscious fear of intimacy. And so when we get into this dynamic, if we're not letting go and allowing ourselves to process those fears and understand where they're coming from and understand they're our own, because it's really easy to project that onto someone else.
That's right.
Right? You're not giving me enough attention. You're not meeting my needs, right? Well, am I meeting my needs? Am I? Am I really taking care of myself, especially as women, right? Am I really nurturing that part of me that needs to be nurtured, or am I asking a man to do all of that in a way that I don't even know what that feels like, right? How are you supposed to communicate with your partner what feels good if you've never experienced it within? So it creates this divide between you because ultimately you're still fighting the partnership and actually being in it and being fully committed to that. And I think a lot of our society is not set up for that anymore, right? It's really easy to say, you know, this person just didn't do this right or didn't do that right. Now, it does take two people. It takes two people. So I say that lightly. But if you have someone else who wants to work at it with you, and if you're partnered in this room, I mean, that's so beautiful that you guys are here and you're investing in your partnerships and in yourself. It's amazing to see and to witness. Then forward march, right? But you have to do that work for you on your own, yeah. Even if you're partnered.
What happens? I said this earlier to you guys, if you guys remember, it's, you know, as long as you're with someone that is willing, like willing to do the work. I get these questions all the time on Instagram and all over the place. It's like, you know, I've been married for this long and, you know, A, B, C, D, E, F, G, right? But they don't want to grow or they don't want to change. You know, my immediate thought is what I've learned is number one, like until you hear the other side of the story, you have no idea what's actually going on in that relationship.
Sure.
Because it's very easy to create the story that they don't want to change, right? The question is, what could you have done or how could you have participated in causing them to take that stance? And the second question is that an imaginary stance? Right? Because so often we create a story and then we hold our partners in the space of that story. And I'm going to be honest, this is for all of you, like 7 out of 10 times, it's complete bullshit. Like I've met some of you where I've been on one-on-one calls with you guys and you guys are like, oh my God, my wife is this and she's this and she's this. And I'm like, damn, this one's going to be a bitch, right? Seriously, in my head. And then like you bring them here and I'm like, they're really nice. Like, what you're telling me obviously wasn't true, which shows me you're just projecting everything onto the partner, you know? So when both people do this, like when both people are living in chaos, like how do you find your way out of it?
I see it as 4 different steps to actually becoming self-actualized in relationship.
And I would write these down. These are gonna be good.
Yeah, so the first step is really cleansing of who you were in past relationships. So many of us hold on to our experiences in the past, and we have these stories about how we need to protect ourselves now in the present and in the future that we bring into our current or future partnerships. So the first step is really cleansing that part of you, understanding what your dating patterns are and relationship patterns are and where they came from. Understanding limiting beliefs that you have that are creating your current reality, taking full ownership that those relationships weren't just brought into you, you called them in for a reason, and trying to understand the reason for those. And then the second step is healing your single self. So a lot of that would include inner child work and understanding how you try to achieve love in your life. In what ways do you think you need to perform and be in order to be loved? And starting to heal those parts of yourself who look for that validation outside of yourself instead of truly understanding how to find that within so you can find someone else who also has that within. And then the third step is to actually release that single self.
That's a big one.
It's a big one. I actually wrote a goodbye letter to my single self about 9 months before I met Mike. And it's so interesting because so many of us have been looking for partnership for so long and we get into those partnerships and then we start idealizing our single life.
Oh, I have a story for you. Oh my God.
Right? We're like, oh my gosh, if I could just be and I do whatever I want and here I am and it's so much easier. And it's not necessarily true, but a lot of us get so afraid of truly releasing our single self and releasing that identity because we've built a bond with that single self. We've been through a lot together. So actually releasing it, you're actually saying goodbye to that version of yourself. So it's really important that they know they don't truly have to leave, right? You're just not going to embody them anymore.
Can I share something?
Yeah, please.
It's so interesting you bring that up because I shared with them earlier that when I felt Jen and I like really coming closer and like this was going to be real and we were going to get married, my ego flared up and I was like, well, what about all the other women? Like, you mean to tell me you're going to give up everything? And like my ego started to play tricks on me. Like I literally needed support through this because here I was, my heart was like, no, I know I want this woman. But my mind was like trying to like keep me from it.
Yeah.
And what I realized was I was afraid. I was afraid because in previous relationships, you know, even in my previous marriage, I knew I wasn't in love. I knew there wasn't love. So it was safe. It was safe to just like deflect and like fight and just and like live in the chaos.
Yeah.
But this was real for me. This was like, this was like love, you know? And love was very alien for me. So I caught my ego trying to find ways to keep myself from the very thing that I wanted. Mm-hmm. And I had to let that part die.
Yeah.
You know, I literally did.
Yeah. I'm curious, how many of you have a fear of your partner holding you back or keeping you from living to your fullest? Yeah, or slowing you down? Yeah. This would be a big one that we place on somebody else. When in reality, it's we're afraid we're going to slow us down, right? Or we're not going to be able to do what it is that we desire, make the impact that we want, or be happy. I remember there was one time when I was single, and I was always in back-to-back relationships. And finally, for the first time in my adult life, in my late-ish 20s, I found myself single. And of course, I went right back into the dating world. So excited and eager and, oh my gosh, there's dating apps now and look at all these men at my fingertips and I'm going to find the one. It's going to be so easy because I've gotten into relationships so easily. And the universe was like, huh, funny. We're not going to let that one happen again, okay? Like, you're actually going to go through this process. And I remember being in bed and feeling the angst as if I was in a relationship with somebody who had let me down. But nobody was there. And it was the first moment that I realized, oh, that's my chaos. That's not someone else's chaos. That's my own chaos. So what's going on here? And I didn't find out that moment. I ended up doing a lot of my own internal work and studies, and that's how we are here today and through my coach. But I recognized that in the moment that I had the same feeling that I thought was a feeling of someone not being right for me or doing wrong to me. But I was the only one there.
There was nobody to,
there's nobody
to
there.
Point to.
No.
Wow.
Yeah. So, you know, I think it's really important that we understand what our fears and our stories are about relationship, because when that single self comes to the forefront, right, we don't notice that we're subconsciously staying in that. It comes out as making up these stories, as finding a reason to not date, as finding a reason to not try to work through something, finding a reason to allow ourselves to just stay in our same patterns. We'll rationalize it until the cows come home, for lack of a better.
Until the day we die.
Yeah. Yes. And so it takes a conscious effort to go, okay, this is going to be uncomfortable, but I can do hard things and I'm worth it. So I'm going to allow myself to release this version of me so I can step into something even greater. And that's a huge part of it. You have to give the subconscious, you have to give the ego something else to hold onto. Otherwise, if it doesn't know where it's going, it's going to go right back into where it was. So really important to have that vision, to feed it an understanding of what's on the other side. Mm-hmm. What does that partnership look like? What are you going to gain? Not what are you going to lose?
I love that.
It's impossible for you to have a successful relationship with another human being or a partner if you don't have a successful relationship with yourself. And what we as human beings don't realize is that we are deeply disconnected. We're disconnected from Mother Earth. We're disconnected from peace. We're disconnected from love. What we do at Awaken is we curate different exercises to help you reconnect first to yourself, and then the beautiful process of reconnecting to everybody begins. And that's why Awaken is so powerful. You'll do more in 3 days at Awaken than you would do 30 years anywhere else.
I was so stuck. Now I feel peace.
Awaken has been the best thing we have done for our marriage.
Coming here, I realized that the answers were inside of me all the time.
Head on over to DannyMorrell.com/awaken now to get your tickets today.
I want to take a moment for all of you here and all of you watching. Number one was cleanse,
yes.
Right? So my challenge to you, please, this is an invitation for all of you to really go here. And I say this because I had to go there in my relationship, right? So if you're single, great. You get to cleanse this now before another partnership. And if you're not, just like I had to, I needed to cleanse it in my partnership. Ready? What, and I want you to write it down just like this. What do I need to let go of from my previous relationship experience? Mm-hmm. For me, it's very well documented. It was the constant need to defend and to fight and to argue. And I always felt unheard. Mm. So then I show up in a relationship with Jen and I'm like, you're not hearing me. She's like, what are you talking about? Of course I am. And I'm like, it was a part of me, yeah. Right? Maybe it's you. Maybe you don't trust. You know, a lot of the stories that us men in here were talking about, maybe you've been through a divorce and you've had to give up like half of everything you worked through or worked for. And now you're afraid that to make that happen again. This is all coming up for a reason, right? Maybe you were cheated on once, mm-hmm. You know, which is terrifying, right? Which is sad, right? Maybe you were cheated on once and you don't want to bring those emotions and those feelings into your next relationship,
right?
Because there's going to be a barrier. It's mm-hmm. going to be a barrier, right? The second one was heal.
The healing. Yeah.
Yeah. Allow yourself, right? Allow yourself to not become aware of the thing that you're bringing in and then allow yourself to feel through it and heal it, right? And then the third was a big one was release, mm-hmm. right? What do I have to release about my single self? Some of us, we're married. I mean, I know my grandfather had a very difficult time releasing because he was married and he fathered like 14 different children with like 7 different women mm-hmm. while being married, by the way. So like he obviously did not want to release, right? Don't be like that. Like, what do you need to release, right? Mm-hmm. About your single self? What do you have to let go of? And what's the fourth one?
The fourth one is stepping into the partnered version of yourself. So putting on your crown, right? And really allowing yourself to create that identity of who you are as a partnered person. What does that look like? What does it look like for you to now not only be you, but half of a relationship, of another entity, right? To be part of a family with you and your partner. At a certain point, if you've been single for a while, it's really easy to keep qualifying your partner again and again and again and again, right? Well, I don't know. Are you going to be right for me? Are you still right for me? Or if you've had past where you've been in long-term relationships or marriages where someone changed, there was a big change, right? It's really easy to stay on guard and to continue to act as if you're still single in a partnership, wondering if that person is still right for you or not, instead of truly being in that partnership, knowing that you are half of that dynamic and being there to support. And to also make sure that you are taking ownership for your core energy and how you show up in it, masculine or feminine, in order to really cultivate that strong bond and polarity over time.
You know what's coming up for me? The other day we got this question, a woman wrote us a question, like, what do I do or what is happening if I'm in a relationship with my boyfriend, mm-hmm. but he still follows a ton of like supermodel or like half naked women on Instagram? Mm-hmm. Let me tell you, if he's still following models on Instagram, he's still living as his single self.
Definitely.
Right? He hasn't been willing to let go of that part of himself mm-hmm. because in truth, it's a way of honoring. It's a way of honoring energetically the person that you're in relationship with, or quite frankly, honoring yourself, that yes. partnered version of yourself.
Yes.
Yeah. Emily, you touched on this, and this was huge for me when I was single. Mm-hmm. I read the book Attached. Mm-hmm. I had no idea about these things called attachment styles. Mm-hmm. And when I read it, it was very illuminating to me because I could clearly see which one I was, right?
Sure.
So could you cover that for a moment? What are attachment styles?
Yeah. So attachment styles are the way that we've learned to receive love or ways in which we believe we aren't going to be loved. So there are 4 main attachment styles. There's anxious, which has a subconscious fear of abandonment. There's avoidant, which has a subconscious fear of intimacy. And then there's anxious avoidant, also called fearful avoidant, which is a subconscious fear of rejection. And then there's the secure attacher who is comfortable with intimacy and experiencing conflict in relationship and understanding how to truly allow themselves to be seen and to see somebody else. And so in our lives, we have been told or we've inherited certain stories about how we have to stay safe in order to be loved. You think about it as a child, right? Because our attachment styles are usually formed in childhood, in early child years. we see our caretakers as a means of survival. So if we are not loved, well, we might not survive. So we look for patterns in our surroundings of how am I supposed to survive? And we internalize these stories, and they come with us throughout our entire lives, and then we relive them again and again in our partnerships, which actually solidifies them in our mind. So we all have what's called confirmation bias. So confirmation bias is we think it, our ego is like, that's truth, I know it, I believe it. Anything else that I see out there that's otherwise, I'm going to clamp down even harder on this belief, right? So if you've ever decided to buy a certain type of car or get a certain type of dog, and then you start seeing that car or dog everywhere, well, that's your confirmation bias, just showing you what it is that you want to see. So we take these stories and we relive them again and again to then decide, okay, that is an ultimate truth of the world, so therefore I need to be on the lookout for this in all my partnerships. And so when you have more anxious tendencies, you're always going to be on the lookout for someone who might leave you. Why might they leave you? You may leave a date or leave a conversation with your partner feeling really uneasy, wondering if you said or did the right thing or the wrong thing. Are they going to leave me now? Am I still lovable? You know, needing a lot of that affirmation.
And anybody like that in here, by the way? That was me. No, I was the worst one. I was both of the bad ones.
That would be more probably fearful avoidant is a combination of two.
I was fucked up is what I was. Yeah, that's what, okay, yeah.
You're in good company.
Yeah.
So avoidance then is someone who has a fear of losing their freedom or their autonomy in partnership. So they're always on the lookout for how someone is going to take away their freedom. They're going to be enmeshed or engulfed with that person. So they're constantly finding ways to detach from the relationship, which puts their partner on guard because likely they've attracted someone who has more anxious tendencies because we are mirrors. And what happens, that person becomes more insecure. So they start trying to get more closeness. They start asking for more intimacy. So then the person who has avoidant tendencies is like, I'm not going to be able to meet their needs. This is not going to work. I'm going to let him or her down. I might as well get out now, but oh my gosh, I already am here. So now I'm obligated to this relationship, and now my freedom's completely gone. What do I do? And they shut down, and they ultimately allow the relationship to lose all intimacy.
Anybody been there? Anybody? This is resonating with anybody, yes? So we're not all crazy, right? You see, this is just called being a human being.
Yes. Yeah. No, reading the book Attached was the moment that made all of my illogical dating decisions and actions make so much logical sense, right? Like, oh, I'm not crazy. I'm just have insecure attachment tendencies.
Yeah.
And I like to call them tendencies because sometimes our partners and where we are can, our attachment tendencies can be a little bit more fluid, right? Where we might feel anxious with one partner, feel more avoidant with another partner, depending on what subconscious fear is being activated. Because if you have anxious attachment tendencies, well, you have a more prominent fear of abandonment. But if that fear is not being activated, it's not being triggered, well, guess what comes up? A fear of intimacy, right?
Damn, you're literally like reading me right now. My God. Yeah.
Yeah. And then the third insecure attachment style is the fearful avoidant, also called anxious avoidant. And that is someone with a subconscious fear of rejection. So in the beginning, they can actually appear more anxious and want a lot of closeness. Relationships can start off really intense and hot and heavy in all insecure attachment styles, by the way. And as soon as they get into the partnership, though, and they start to feel like they're being seen, they will look for all signs of rejection, right? So this is the pivotal difference between someone who has more avoidant tendencies and someone who has more fearful avoidant tendencies is where is the pain? Is it in the fear of rejection or the fear of intimacy? Mm. So they're going to be looking for any signs of rejection. So something as little as the partner kind of like moving away from them on the couch can send off alarms. So another way to look at this is someone with anxious tendencies has more of a negative view of self. Someone with avoidant tendencies has a negative view of others. And someone with fearful avoidant tendencies has a negative view of themselves and of others. Let's talk about chaos. Yeah. Yeah, it's painful.
Yeah.
It all is, because in the end of the day, we're trying to find love, but what we're doing is actually recreating those stories, which is why it's so pivotal to make a conscious, concerted effort to change them. Because even when you understand it, you might still go back to those patterns. And then it feels really safe to stay in it. And especially, I've noticed, if you have more avoidant tendencies, it's also very safe to stay single. Mm. So you feel pretty good single.
Yeah. Yeah. And what is secure?
Secure is somebody who is able to give and receive intimacy. So they are secure with themselves, they're secure in the relationship, and they're able to have a harmonious relationship pretty easily.
I'm that now, by the way.
Amazing.
Yeah. Right. But in honest truth, as you were saying that, and this is like when you really open your heart to relationship, I can legitimately say this with every fiber of my being, I wouldn't be that without Jen.
Mm.
Because Jen provided the space for me to heal all those parts of me.
Beautiful.
Like there was nothing left to like worry about or run from or avoid. It was like we just kept going into it. And then finally it's like, you can live, you can love. It's, mm-hmm. it's really beautiful.
That is beautiful.
Yeah.
I love that.
Is this helpful? Yeah. How many of you guys are is this like seeing like, oh my God, this is me, right? This is me. Yeah. How many of you guys maybe see something that you definitely need to work on, you know, whether single or in relationship, like, right? This is really big, really big. We had a deep, deep workshop today on masculine and feminine energy, mm-hmm. right? Talk to me about masculine and feminine energy in relationships and what does it look like when it's balanced and out of balance?
Mm. So I don't want to be too repetitive for this audience, but for the sake of the podcast.
Of the podcast, yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
So the masculine is our logical, analytical part of ourselves. So prefacing that we all have the masculine and feminine within us, right? It's not related to gender. It's sacred energies that are called masculine and feminine. And so the masculine energy is the analytical, it's a logical, doing, assertive, confident energy that we have within us. So I always say, think of the masculine as building and the feminine as creating, right? So the masculine builds. It creates a plan, it goes after it, it takes the steps. It's very logical and analytical in that sense. And then the feminine is the nurturing, the receiving, the creation, right? Feminine energy is very creative. It's playful and nurturing. There's a lightness to it. It's magnetic. And when the two are in synergy, well, then you have harmony in a relationship. Something that came up in one of my groups, we were talking about faith. And I said, I see faith as the perfect combination of the masculine and the feminine. Mm. Because in order to have faith, you have to have direction, know where you're going. That's a masculine. And you also have to be in full surrender.
Wow.
Which is the feminine. So when you have faith in your relationship, you have a harmony of the masculine and the feminine, of having confidence and knowing where you're going and having that structure, and then the full surrender to be able to receive it as it comes. And so I see that dance in partnership too, where when it's balanced, you're able to come together and create something amazing that you wouldn't necessarily be able to create on your own. And when it's imbalanced, well, you either have two bulls rearing their heads together, right, or rams, or you have two people who are not able to create any structure, right? There's a different sort of chaos that's happening that has no ability to hold space for both people to be in their full selves. And there's, in both cases, a lack of polarity, but especially if there's two people who are in their feminine. And we should caveat that wounded feminine
wounded,
energy.
Right, right.
Yeah. So if we look at wounded energy to break it down, wounded masculine energy is dominant, controlling, right? It's aggressive versus assertive. So I always like to say the difference between being aggressive and assertive is energetically allowing her to say no. So if somebody says, you know, if let's say we're on a date or you're going on a date and you say, okay, I'll pick you up at 7 on Saturday and we'll go to X, Y, and Z restaurant. Well, energetically, if you're holding the space for her to say, oh, actually 7 doesn't really work for me, well, now you're being assertive. But being aggressive is saying, like, I'll pick you up at 7, be ready, and we'll go to dinner. And if she says no, you take that personally, right? That's being aggressive. So important to understand the difference between the two. It's very slight, but one is wounded energy and one is healthy energy. And then another example of wounded feminine energy is people pleasing, right? Or feeling really insecure, relying on someone else for affirmation. Those are all parts of wounded feminine energy. And so it's really important, especially when you are a man leading the dating process, if you are leading to try to please her, if you are leading in hopes that what you're doing is going to make her like you, well, you're actually in wounded feminine energy. Mm. You're no longer in healthy energy, and you're definitely not in healthy masculine energy, which creates polarity with a core feminine energy woman.
Mm. Absolutely. Mm-hmm. How do people rebalance this in relationship?
Well, it's really important to understand that whether you're a man or a woman, you have to heal both masculine and feminine energy. It's not a one or the other. And so the first step is to, one, identify what your core energy is, right? Where do I feel like myself? Where do I feel the most confident and free? Where do I feel really good and like me? And what type of partner also helps balance that? What type of partner really illuminates that piece of me, right? Because if you're going, okay, well, I'm a woman, but I feel like there's a lot of masculine energy in me, but I know I don't want to attract a man who has more feminine energy because that doesn't make me feel safe. That doesn't make me feel, you know, supported and protected. Okay, well, how do I then understand, am I really core masculine energy, or has that been a shield or a guard that I've put up? Right? And so that's where you can start asking yourself those questions to understand, okay, if I want to attract somebody who's in this energy, masculine or feminine, what pieces of me do I need to look at and observe to go, okay, does something in me need to change, or does something in the vision of my partner need to change? Right? If you truly are a woman who feels core masculine and being with a man who has more core feminine energy feels good to you, well, then it's important to identify that so that way you can find someone who's going to illuminate both sides.
Can I say something?
Mm-hmm.
And by the way, this is for you ladies. You know, often there's a lot of wonderful men out there who can provide, who make great money, who have great businesses, but their core is very heart-centered. It's very it's very feminine, right? Mm-hmm. So we don't want to get confused with, I get these questions all the time. It's like, I want somebody that can provide for me, but I also want someone that's like really loving. Like in many ways, it's like that's very balanced energy. Like when a man is in his balanced energy, he can do and be both,
yes.
Right? And you'll feel good in both the receiving, but also in giving him the parts of you that are going to help him as well.
Yes.
Yeah.
I always like to use rock stars as an example of that. I mean, not necessarily, we don't know if it's healthy, like right. What it's like behind the scenes. But when you see them on stage, right, there's such a like dichotomy of this masculine and feminine. When you're looking at a male rock star, right, he's creative, he's up there, he's dancing, he's releasing,
he's in
tights. Creativity, he's in tights. and at the same time, he is deeply masculine in his mission and purpose of being up there, of moving people, of performing, right? So I love that reminder to everybody that it's important for all of us to be balanced in both so we can access both. If I couldn't access my masculine energy, it'd be really hard for me to be up here right now.
Yeah.
Right?
And as you were saying that, it was like, you know, as a man, I thought, like, I think there's times where the core of me is here because of like the work that I do.
Yeah.
And then my masculine, no, you can't be there. No, because that's like for women or something like that.
Yeah.
But, you know, but in all honesty, like, that's where I live most of my life. Most of what I do, it's like I'm really good at envisioning what I want and like planning it out and making it happen and delegating. But then like this is what, like, you know, when we're all crying and hugging and we're healing and we're throwing up and shit and like our lives are changing. Yes, that's That's what makes me tick. It's this, you know?
That's beautiful.
Yeah.
But I would ask you, was that always your nature? Did it always feel like you could access your heart?
No.
Right.
My heart was the thing that was the most blocked. Mm-hmm. Like I would create circumstances. I would blame. Mm-hmm. I would create situations. I would look for exits. I would do absolutely anything in my power to avoid my heart.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why the work that we do is so important, because I think there's a lot of men out there like me.
Mm-hmm.
I think there's a lot of men out there that have been told that returning to their heart is the worst thing that they can do.
Absolutely.
And I'm here to tell men, on the contrary, it's the most, not only important, but beautiful, most honorful thing that you can do for yourself and for your family.
Right.
I
but
really
how scary for someone who's built a life around control to surrender.
That was me.
Right?
Man.
So, and to go back to what you were saying around it not being how you were before, but going through this transformation in order to access your heart, that's exactly what I'm talking about when I say we need to heal both.
Yeah.
Right, and there's a lot of messages out there, you know, for men and women to be a certain way, but especially men in the dating process, to not show your emotions, to be strong, to be the protector. Like, if you show something, a woman's going to leave. And what happens is, when you have those beliefs in your head, well, you keep attracting women who do that.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And on the flip side of that, like, what came easy to me, like the money, the leadership, all of that side,
mm-hmm.
I realized that it was from a toxic energy.
Mm-hmm.
It was from a toxic need. It was like from a not good place. So I had to like heal that part.
Yes.
But then for the men who are more naturally in their feminine, right, you get to then like rise up into mm-hmm. your masculine. Mm-hmm. So maybe the invitation is, yeah, maybe it's scary for you to think of a world where you don't split the bill, where mm-hmm. you are responsible for all of it, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like, go into that. Why does that make you uncomfortable? Why mm-hmm. does that make you uneasy? What's the story that you've created? And that's where our beautiful sisters get to be a wonderful gift for us.
Yes.
Because if we could learn to honor that and hold space and like just accept that responsibility, it does something for mm-hmm. us. It changes our lives, mm-hmm. you know? Same on the flip side with the women.
Saying, women
yeah.
to receive,
yeah,
right?
For women to receive.
It can be really scary
yeah.
to receive, to allow yourself to be in that surrender with your partner and in partnership and with yourself, especially if you have been hurt by the masculine, whether it be a caretaker or an ex, a past relationship. It's really easy to then decide, well, I'm going to do it better and I'm going to protect myself. And it's not to say to not have ambition or dreams. I'm sitting up here having a ton of them and running a company, but it's really important to also be in balance, like you're saying, around you finding that heart space. A lot of women need to find that heart space too,
mm-hmm.
because our society is very much set up to honor more of the masculine, sometimes even wounded masculine, the competitiveness. And so it's really important for all of us to come back to our heart space in order to connect that way.
Yeah.
So if you've been listening to my podcast, you know I'm a strong believer and proponent of plant medicine's ability to awaken your mind, body, and soul. And many of you have asked me where I recommend going to experience the power of these medicines. And the only place on planet Earth I would ever recommend is Reunion. It's a not-for-profit healing center with over 30 years of experience in Costa Rica, which I trust wholeheartedly. I'm honored to have aligned with them to create the Higher Self Scholarship Fund. So $100 from every booking from our community goes into this fund, and we will award the fund to someone like you every couple of months. So help me help others by using the code DANNYREUNION when registering. The link to register can be found in the podcast notes, or you can learn more by going to reunionexperience.org.
You know, I get a lot of men who ask me, well, like, how do I flirt with a woman? And there's two pieces to this. The first is, she needs to feel safe enough to be in her feminine. Because when a woman is in her feminine, she actually leads that flirtation and playfulness. Because she's open. So she brings it out. And that's when you feel invited into it, right? So if you try to force that, or if you're trying to like create flirtation, she's like this, right? Like, what's your motive? What's going on? What do you want from me? And the second piece is, you can't flirt from your masculine energy. Right? You can't flirt from here. It all comes from here. Like, think about comedians, right? I don't see them really telling jokes from their head. They're coming from their heart and their gut, right? So when you're flirting, when you're teasing, when you're noticing something and going with that gut reaction, well, that's your feminine energy.
Mm. I love that. Mm-hmm. I love that. I want to go, what are you guys all giggly over here for, huh? What's going on over here? Oh, Sarah's doing her thing? Yeah. Sarah's a comedian, by the way. Oh. She's a comedian, yeah.
Oh, I love that. You're so welcome.
Yeah, that's beautiful.
Do we have any rock stars in the audience?
Any rock stars in tights, huh? Yeah, we have a rock star.
Oh, there. Here you go. Yeah. Yes.
I want to see your pink tights afterwards, okay? So, you know, final thing I want to discuss with you.
Sure.
Like, I think that, like, the world of dating. Mm. How many single people do we have in here? Raise your hands, by the way. Okay,
ooh,
beautiful.
Good chunk.
All right. Mm-hmm. Right? So this is like, you know, and in relationships, like, talk to me about dating.
Mm.
Like, dating in today's world, dating 101, like, what's out there? And what's it like? And how do we get better at it?
Yes. So I would say dating today is very different than what dating looked like 10 years ago, 20 years ago. Because we have the ability to meet people in so many different ways. We also have now decided that our partners are going to be a lot more to us than we have in the past, right? So we've seen the pain of our parents or other loved ones going through divorce, and we've looked at that going, okay, how do I make sure that doesn't happen?
Right.
Right? So we have these higher expectations now. And so the combination of the two makes the dating world a little bit trickier to navigate. Though I don't want you to internalize that as a limiting belief. I want you to, like, ingrain the belief that dating comes easy for me. Like, my dream partner just effortlessly enters my life. I can just be me in my life, right? But it's important that we do recognize some of the practicalities of it so you can understand if you are buying into any of those. So with the million options at our fingertips, whether it be dating apps or social media, we have this feeling of I can have whoever I want while also then broadcasting all of these different images of different couples online too that we feel like we have to live up to.
Mm.
So dating can become very disconnected where both people are looking at their checklists, also going, do I feel this immediate chemistry with this person, right? Is it just fireworks within, you know, the first few minutes of being on a date with somebody? And wanting to create something that may or may not be based on what's actually going to be beneficial in your life and what's actually going to bring you fulfillment, right? So looking at becoming more selective in the things that really matter to you in partnership is crucial to navigating the modern dating world. Because if you are looking at a million different pieces of a person, trying to mesh them all together to create this perfect person, because you are projecting your feelings of imperfection within you. And we see a lot of that in the dating world where I feel imperfect, therefore my partner has to be perfect because my partner is a reflection of me. And so if people are going to see me and my partner together, they have to see perfection.
Mm. That's big.
Yeah. So we see a lot of that happening in the modern dating world. But I do believe that we attract that which we are. And so if you are able to step into the version of yourself who is truly able to attract the person that will benefit you, that will bring you fulfillment, not fulfillment that you couldn't get within. I want to caveat that.
Yeah.
Right? Fulfillment within. The partner adds to that fulfillment. Then we have to look at, okay, what are my deal breakers? And what are my nice to haves, right? So what are some things that are absolute no's for me? And what are some things that, okay, that'd be really nice if they have it, but if they have everything else, then I can potentially release that.
I can live with it.
Yeah, I can live with it. But not even live with it, but maybe that one nice to have came into your life so you learned how to accept that in another person.
Yes.
Because you don't accept that within yourself.
Yes.
So staying open to the journey. I mean, dating is such a journey, right? When you look at every single date that you go on as an opportunity to experience more of you and experience more of yourself in partnership or getting to know someone, or just even the curiosity of who is this person and what character do they play in my life? Well, now you're no longer going on serial dates and feeling like, oh my gosh, how much longer is this going to take? You're living an amazing life.
In the now.
In the now.
Yeah.
And that attracts the person who also feels that way, right? Mm-hmm. So a lot of the times people, when they're getting into the dating world, put a lot of pressure on themselves. They want the first date to be the one, right? That first date that they go on from, you know, a dating app to be the one. And when they're not, well, now they've created a little story like, oh, maybe this isn't going to happen as easily as I thought. And what else do I need to do? And so a lot of people turn to tactics and understanding how to talk to somebody on a dating app, how to get them off the app, how to set up their profile, which are all things that I do with my clients. But they're not going to get you very far. They might get you a conversation. They might get you a date. But when those patterns pop back up, you're right back where you started.
So yesterday, true story, I'm sitting at lunch and one of our beautiful Inner Circle members asked me this question, right? And I think it's a question that a lot of people struggle with. It's like having standards, but then also like being okay with certain things. Mm. So she goes to me, by the way, if you drive a Subaru Outback, I am not speaking negatively to you in any way, shape, or form. It is okay to drive one. This particular lady says, Danny, I was dating somebody and he drives a Subaru Outback. And in my head, I'm like, why the heck are you driving a Subaru Outback? I don't want to be with someone that's driving a Subaru Outback, right?
Yes.
And I go, you do understand it's okay if he does. Yes, but it's not for me, right? How do you find the balance?
Yes.
This is a real question. How do you find the balance between like that list of like must-have standards and the list of, well, it would be nice. How do you work through that?
Well, does that make someone a good partner or not is the main question. So something that my fiance Mike and I like to practice is asking ourselves in our household, is this a roommate issue or is this a relationship issue? Mm. A roommate issue, like someone leaving the dishes in the sink, is not an indication of them being a good or bad partner. It's simply dishes in the sink. Same thing with a Subaru. What are you making? What are you making that Subaru mean about that person, right? Same with the dishes. He doesn't care about me. He doesn't care that like I want this house to be clean. So now he's just leaving the dishes in the sink. And oh my gosh, that means I'm not loved. And this is the right partnership, right? You could go down that spiral, and a lot of us do. Same with the Subaru. Okay, like maybe he's like doesn't like the restaurants I like, and maybe it's like, does he really value nice things? Or I don't know, our Subarus are nice though, right? They're like moderate. Yeah. Yeah.
I reserve my comments.
Okay, yeah. We're not gonna talk about Subarus too. But you know, what stories are you making that Subaru mean about them?
Sure.
Right? And so we all have these little stories that we bring up into our minds. And really, just to go back to how we started our discussion, it's a defense mechanism.
Gotcha.
If that person was amazing, except he drove a Subaru, how scared could you potentially be of actually being in a relationship with someone? I'm like, these clips with the Subarus. Emily doesn't like Subarus.
The last podcast,
my brother drives a Subaru. I'm like,
the last podcast, they jumped all over you. Remember that? I remember you said on the clip
something.
You said it was always something.
It's something. Yeah, it's something. Something. Yeah. Yes. People like to comment.
Yeah. Okay. So
anyways, if that person truly is aligning with your vision of the person that you feel like you could be with, and then you find that one thing about them, I'm going to call Mike out again. For me, it was his barbed wire tattoo.
He has a barbed wire tattoo?
Yep.
Really?
He got when he was like 18 years old in the Marines. And for me, it was like, oh, this guy is great, but like that barbed wire tattoo, what am I going to do with that? Like, at least it won't show on our wedding day. Like, he'll have a tux. You know, my mind was going to all these different things, because there was nothing else to hold on to.
Yeah.
My single self was like, find a way out.
Yeah.
Go back to the serial dating. Go back to this idealistic idea of finding this person. Because when you actually have a dream of being in a partnership, there is a death that happens within you when you actually have it. Mm-hmm. that achievement, that sense of mystery, that idea of when is this going to happen and could this happen and what is this going to feel like is now in front of you. And you actually have to experience it. And a lot of us are not in our bodies and in our hearts enough to actually be able to experience it. And so we push it away because accessing that requires all the things that we saw today, which a lot of people don't want to do.
Yeah. Thank you, Emily.
You're welcome.
You. Yeah. I'd love to, you guys, I'm sure questions are coming up, yeah? And Casper, would the audio pick up the questions in the show?
No, we need the
microphone. Oh, so the microphone? Yeah, let's get some questions.
Great.
Has this been helpful?
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely, yeah. You have a question? Beautiful, yeah. And Casper, we'll edit it out so they only hear the question and the answer. And
Yeah,
we need a microphone. Just raise your hands.
Hi, Emily.
Hi.
So you're saying to get rid of your dating self or your single self mm-hmm. before you get in a relationship. Is that correct?
In an ideal world, you can start to release that version of you. Mm-hmm. But if you're partnered, you can still do that as well. You know, something that I just want to caution all of you is when we enter the world of personal development, it's really easy to make ourselves into a project and think we have to achieve a certain level of inner peace, of self-worth, of whatever it is, until we're ready for that next thing. But it's not always on your timeline that something's going to happen, right? And it's important to not use the excuse of not feeling like you're perfectly aligned with this person to not put yourself out there. So yes, I think all of this is a constant flux because as we enter each stage of intimacy in a relationship, there's going to be another evolution of who we are.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. I'm just wondering if you should do that before because I'm not in a relationship and there's a part of being single that I really enjoy. So
okay.
I might.
Then that might be the first step for
you.
Yeah,
I know. That's an interesting way to look at that. Okay.
Yeah.
What I would suggest is also looking at your stories around enjoying your singleness, because mm-hmm. if you've been in partnerships that didn't lift you up, right, that first step of healing from that can help you go into the next phases of healing the single self, releasing the single self mm-hmm. so much easier. Because if you try to release the single self without first going back and going, why am I holding on to this single life? It's not going to land the same way in your subconscious or in your ego, and therefore it's going to be easier to go back.
Yeah. Okay. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Great question. Anybody else? Questions? Oh, you guys got it all figured out, huh? No questions? All right. Emily, thank you for being here.
Thank you so much for having me.
Yeah, thank you for being here. Yeah. How do people find out more about you?
Yeah. So if you want to connect with me, you can connect with me mainly on Instagram is where I hang out, and it's Emily Freeman Coaching.
I love it.
Yeah.
I love it. Give Emily some love, everybody. Thank you so much,
Thank
Emily.
You guys. Thank you. So good. Yes, thank you.
That was wonderful.
That was so good.
Was
thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Hey, friends. This week, we're going to do something new. You've been asking so many questions that we're going to start answering them on a weekly basis. So here's this week's question.
Do I need to seek closure before moving on? I've been in a relationship for 6 months. After I opened my heart for the first time to someone over my divorce, everything was amazing at the beginning, and I slowly noticed a communication in our relationship, especially after his mom passed away. It's been a month now with no texts, even when I try and reach out. Do I need to talk to him and seek closure for our relationship, or should I just move on without talking about what happened?
It's interesting. What's coming up for me is that it's been a month since the individual reached out to you. And yet there's a part of you that wants to seek closure when closure is right in front of you. This man has closed the door to relationship with you. I think that it's time for you to accept that the door has been closed, right? And if closure is what you want, closure doesn't come from someone outside of you. Closure is not something that you seek. Closure is something that you step into in your own mind, your own heart, your own body, your own soul. So you can meditate that. You can cut the cord with this individual, and you can say that this chapter in your life is no more. You can thank him for the lessons he taught you, and you can send them off in love.
Always remember, the answer and the power is not outside of you. It's not in another person. It's inside of you. So step into that power and give yourself the closure that you're looking for. Thank you for your question. We're going to be doing this every single week. And yet, if you want your questions answered live, we do this every week on Thursday afternoons inside of Awaken You. So go to DannyMorrell.com/AwakenYou. Sign up and I'll see you inside.